Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hello, everyone out there today. This is Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'll be speaking with our regular co-host, Christina Chambreau, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. Today is May 31st, 2012. This is the last day of the month, and we're going to be heading straight into summertime. This is the show in the series where you can visit the live chat, you can comment, and call in to ask your questions. Do you have a pet? You have a bird, a turtle, a cat, a dog, a horse? Well, we have answers. We have possible solutions. Learning about just loving your pet, all the energy medicines that are out there, and of course, homeopathy as our foundation. And we have been talking the last class, I would call it a class, was about pet behavior. And today I believe we're going to learn a little bit about remedies and pet behavior. But I want to encourage everyone out there to run out right now, tweet it, put it on Facebook, tell your friends, Dr. Chambreau's talking to you, and you can get on and ask your questions. Just by checking in on the chat, I'm going to see right now if we have any visitors. Yes, we do. And yay, we got a visitor. And I don't know whether they came in from, wave hello to the guest. And if you came in through Twitter or Facebook, let us know. Also, you can listen to the archives of our shows and share them with your friends. I'm starting off with a couple of quotes. This one is by Jeff Daniels. He spoke these words when he was shooting the film 101 Dalmatians. Well, he certainly had a lot of dogs to deal with. He said, "I was haunted by trainers going, up, 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 get up. You find yourself picking your head up and then realizing they aren't talking to me." So that's why the beginning of every show I say, click the tweet button, get out there, and share the show. And the second one is by Paul A. Curtis, who says, quote, "How true it is that dogs reflect the character of their masters. A noisy, blustering windbag of a man inevitably has a dog that rushes out to roar at everything that will give ground to him. The dour chap possesses a sullen beast of kind, and your hail fellow sort of person usually owns a merry member of the tail waggers that considers all passers-by friends." I guess they might be phosphorus types. I don't know. But it's interesting, isn't it, how we have, even in shows, how the owners resemble their pets. Or vice versa.
Well, it would be an interesting thing. One of these days when I have more energy, I may try going to more shows and see what I can see. It'd be fun.
Well, there are plenty of websites out there that have photographs showing the resemblances between the pets and their owners. And, you know, like the floppy-haired Cocker Spaniel and the Regal dog, or that perks up, or the Persian cat, you know, with the face that's a little bit flatter. You know, it's very interesting.
Yeah, and some of those, you know, you can find those, but if you were at a show, the trick would be to be at a show or to be at a dog park when you're at the dog park and really notice how many are like that, or is it the unusual that's like that?
That's a good question. Yeah.
You know, it's like we notice what's unusual.
Uh-huh.
We don't always notice what's usual or normal. That's one of the problems, actually, in homeopathy, and Hahnemann talks about it, and that's why we have the early warning sign, the list of the early warning signs that the energy balance is out of whack, because, as he says, the symptoms, the things that you that are common, the things that you have all the time, the chronic disease symptoms you forget about, you learn to adjust to them, you become immune to them. And so when you're reporting your symptoms, you tend to not even talk about them because they're not something that you're really paying any attention to anymore. So you have to pay attention to those. So the common things you're used to all the time, you don't notice. But the unusual, like somebody who looks just like their dog, you notice.
Yes. Well, you know what? It could be what you're saying, but for some reason, it really seems to be true whenever I see anybody walking their dog or just anywhere I am. It just appears that way to me. Maybe it's all in my mind.
No, okay. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see because I haven't seen it particularly that much. So we're talking about behavior problems, which are one of the main reasons that animals are returned to shelters is for the various behavior problems they have. And to briefly review last week, one of the key things is to make a distinction of, is it a vital force imbalance that needs homeopathic treatment, acupuncture treatment, other energy treatment, or is it really the owner? Is it training that's needed? Is it the circumstances the animal is in? And sometimes these are very subtle. And is it something else that's going on as opposed to actually an illness that needs treating. It's also important to see if there was a physical problem that happened, an illness, a medical condition that happened before the physical problem, before the emotional problem started. Is that what caused it? Is it a residual effect from that? Did a cat have a urinary tract problem that was treated with antibiotics, so it was going to the box really frequently and not even going to the box or going to the tub because it had this bladder problem? And then once that was healed or suppressed or palliated, once those symptoms went away, the cat is still not using the litter box properly, and that could be from that original physical problem. The third thing is, are vaccines implicated? Because if behavior problems start after vaccines, or if behavior problems seem to get worse after a repetition of a vaccine, then you know not to do the vaccines, number one, and number two, that the treatment needs to involve sort of undoing that damage from the vaccines. And I would say that probably a conservative guess is, well, let's see, let's split this out. I would say of the behavior problems, of all behavior problems, probably 60% at least are because of the owners and lack of training or circumstances that the animal is in. And of the 40 that remain, of those animals that really have a vital force imbalance causing the behavior problem, I would say that 30% of those are because of vaccines. And then the final thing is, this may be just a normal, natural behavior for that animal, and we just don't like it. So we have to sort of look at that first. And now, if we have an animal that we're clear has a vital force imbalance that actually has an, quote, illness, that they are energetically out of whack, what treatment would we give for that?
You're asking
not sure.
me? Are you asking?
No,
me?
I'm just saying that's what we're going to look at is what
right.
you know how now we're going to look at using remedies for problems.
Right. So,
and as
so
I look at my notes, I'm not even sure why I put this example in here. That's interesting.
Okay. Well, you've given us quite a list to check off first before
right.
we
that's
even.
That's all last week's talk.
Yeah, you've given us quite a list of things to recognize in the environment, how we're dealing with the pet, what their basic needs are. And before we even get to a remedy, have we taken care of blocks to cure, basically? And then you said what kind of medical care they're getting from the veterinarian if they're getting regular vaccines. And you've given us many stories where the owners have noticed after vaccines the behavior changes. And so that is a large component. So you really
yeah.
can eliminate a lot before you even get to the fact that let's look at a homeopathic remedy.
Right, exactly. So now, once you've gotten to the homeopathic remedy part, now we're in a real conundrum. It's hard enough in using the repertory and the provings of the remedies. It's hard enough to figure out the mental symptoms for people and what is meant by the different mental symptoms how the homeopaths and how people describe how clinically and in tests, how the remedies acted on them. But, like, why would affection be in the repertory? That seems like a normal thing. So it has to be when it's really overboard. Or what is meant by fear of noises versus sensitivity to noises?
That's a good question. Are we going to talk about that?
Well, we'll go through some of these, but the point is there's a big difference between looking up a symptom such as eruptions, itching, must scratch until it bleeds.
Right.
Okay, that's very clear cut. You have a person who has bumps, and they scratch it until it bleeds, and then as soon as it starts bleeding, the itch is gone, and they stop scratching. You have a dog who has bumps, scratches it. As soon as it bleeds, you don't know if it stops itching because you can't ask them, but as soon as it bleeds, they stop scratching.
Right.
So that's a very clear-cut symptom. If you have hair that's greasy and dull,
right.
Clear cut, whether it's a person or an animal. You have to realize where to find that for animals versus people, but in the repertory, that it's still a very clear cut symptom. But why is the animal doing what the animal is doing? Is it, I mean, I'm dealing with a 25 year old cat who has had some kidney disease and then developed an upper respiratory and since then has not been well. And one of the things we're trying to decide now, the cat is lying in front of the refrigerator and alternates between the refrigerator and going and lying on an air conditioning vent. But in front of the refrigerator, there's an air conditioning vent as well. So is it that the cat likes the noise of the refrigerator? Is it, you know, the owner said the refrigerator sounds like a purr. Maybe the cat's going over to the refrigerator for comfort. I would have never thought about that as a possibility. So,
well, interesting. The vent in front of the refrigerator, usually, you know, you should really actually go there and put your hand there because
yep.
it could be warm. So meaning
usually refrigerators are warm underneath.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I'm
but this
thinking
is one where the refrigerator happens to also be near a cool vent.
Right.
An air conditioning vent. So it's the point I'm making is here's a woman who brought up an idea for me that's an emotional thing about
uh-huh.
a behavior and I never would have even thought about that.
Well,
is it because the refrigerator is making noise?
Yes.
and the animal wants to be where the noise is. So that, you know, it's like the point I'm making here is it's very difficult to know what the emotions are of an animal. Why is the animal doing what they're doing? What even are they really doing? How can we describe it in terms of curing a behavior? So one of the important things is to remember that in homeopathy, we do not treat one symptom. So we're not treating the barking. We're not trying to fixing the barking is part of what we want to do, but we're not basing our treatment on the bark. We're basing our treatment on the barking and any past medical history and any early warning signs in other parts of the body. In order to get a good remedy, you really need a three-legged stool. So you need symptoms in at least three areas of the body. So the mind is only part of it. So you have to be very careful not to try to just do mental symptoms. Number one, they're hard. Number two, hard to figure out for people and even harder for animals. Number three is it's just not that focused. You can't look at just one part of the case. You have to look at the whole animal. You can't focus just on one part.
Right.
So
it seems that the first examples that you gave were observations from the owner of the animal where, you know, mm-hmm. scratch until it bleeds. But those are very concrete. They're very absolute physical symptoms. And then if you talk about observing the behavior of the cat moving from in front of the fridge to in front of the vest, it's open and subject to interpretation as to why we see and we can try and put it together. And it seems to me also that getting the viewpoint of the owner that you might in your mind as the vet think, okay, there is movement of air. It might be cooler or hotter. But the owner is talking about the noise, which means she is there in the room, and she is going to be more subject to notice the things that might be affecting the cat. So, you know, the refrigerator goes on and off. And mm-hmm. sometimes it is making the purring sound, and sometimes it's not. So...
Right.
So she could be even more detailed to find out when that cat is moving back and forth.
Which may or may not be significant, because in a cat that's weak, they may choose to be near the purring sound even when it's not there part of the time. They may just stay there and hang out anyway. So that's the point is, it is subtle. Now, when we're looking at rubrics, one of the best things that people can do who are new to homeopathy, and even those of us who are pretty experienced can learn from this, is Karen Allen wrote The Tutorial for the Homeopathic Repertory. And it is an excellent book to learn how to use the repertory, but it's also an excellent book to see the subtle differences between some of the different rubrics. And I co-wrote the second edition with her. So the second edition of the Tutorial for the Homeopathic Repertory is full of animal examples as well. So you could, for instance, look at what she says in her book of the difference between contemptuous versus defiant, or violent anger and destructiveness. So you can go through different sections. If somebody listening to this call is an animal behavioralist and they're trained also in homeopathy and they want to start treating animals with homeopathy, then they're going to need to sit down and really learn everything that's in this section of the repertory so they understand it. So here's a couple of examples. And one is when an owner, this happens frequently because I'm talking to people on the phone since I do telephone consulting for their animals. And so there's some dogs that bark only when the owner is on, or mostly when the owner is on the phone, or every time the owner is on the phone, they're barking and won't stop. So what does that mean? Is it sensitive to voices? Sometimes when we're speaking on the phone, we have a different tone of voice. They might live in a house where people don't talk a whole lot except when they're on the phone. Or is it jealousy? They want attention, and they're not getting attention. Somebody else is getting attention, and I'm not getting attention. So why is it that they're barking? They think the phone is harming them, so there's a protectiveness to that. So see how we can interpret these in many ways. And somebody, I don't know who, because I can't figure it out, said egotism could be when the barking, when the owner is on the phone. And I don't quite know how that would fit, but I culled this from a lot of different sources. So somebody, some veterinarian somewhere thought maybe it could be egotism.
Maybe because the dog thinks that they're the person talking on the phone, and they're
I doubt it.
No?
That's a big stretch.
That's a big stretch. They want to talk over the owner?
Something like that could be like maybe a dominance or something possible.
Right.
But you can see how it's difficult to decide.
Yes.
Here's another one.
Go ahead.
Here's another one.
Something in the chat. Okay.
Oh, go ahead with the chat.
Okay. Dr. Bob asked, do cats and dogs, quote unquote, talk to communicate sickness?
Well, I don't know about communicating sickness. They do find many ways to communicate sickness, such as cats with bladder problems frequently urinate in the bathtub, which isn't easy to get to, and yet they do that so the owners see the blood. Animals talk in their animal ways with body position, ears, etc. But also, some animals do talk with their voice. So when a cat catches a prey, a mouse or a bird, and they want to be proud of the fact and tell you that they've caught something, they have a particular sing-song meow that they go, meow, 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 like that, that shows, and I can hear that and know that my cat's bringing me something. So sometimes cats and dogs do talk, and they have different tones.
That's cool. Well, yeah, and actually, I think there are people who interpret the position of the tail.
Well, like I said, using their animal.
Yeah.
That's the way animals communicate with animals. But I'm talking about the quote talking.
Okay.
And the other, definitely body positions, ears, tail, hackles, all of those. We have to learn their language.
Uh-huh. And I know
but they also vocalize as well.
Yeah, vocalize like chickens when they're laying an egg.
Right. There you go. Now, see, if you were doing behavior study or if you were trying to apply that for some reason as a symptom, why are they making that noise when they lay an egg? They're proud, they're in pain, they're relief by getting it out.
Right. There are many
reasons. Know.
There's many reasons. And so would you use it for a symptom when you're concerned about your animal, or do you only use it because it's unusual because he is or isn't doing it, or it sounds different?
Well, first, we always look at what's new. So if there's a change, then you have to see if it's a change that's a negative change or not. So you certainly wouldn't use affectionate for an animal who its whole life is an affectionate animal. You might use affectionate when you have an animal who is really ill and wants to be held a lot, although the better rubric for that would be consolation, desire for consolation. So it is when the symptom is pronounced and causing a problem. So, for instance, one symptom that causes a problem for a lot of people is destructiveness, whether it's a cat or a dog. And so different rubrics for destructiveness, there is a rubric destructiveness. There's also desire to break things, tear things, And then you have, why are they being destructive? So is it fear of being alone? Is it anger? Is it irritability? Is it fear of being alone? These animals that have separation anxiety and are destructive. Are they being destructive when you're away because they're angry that you're gone? Or are they doing it because they're afraid of being alone and they're frantic? And in this franticness, they're destroying things. So you see how you need to, it's good to know what rubrics to be looking for, but you also have to page through and sort of see what else is possible that fits this particular animal. So
okay.
Another one is...
Yeah, I interrupted you a moment ago from your examples list after the cat with the bladder urination to answer the chat question. So are we back where we were?
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay. Destructiveness, okay. That was the next one. I'm just looking at different behaviors and what are possible rubrics to show. Here's some rubrics to look at, but also often the rubrics are very opposite and we have to figure out why is it this one or that one. So here's one. If you start to approach an animal and they're growling at you, why is that? Is it the rubric aversion to being approached, aversion to being touched? Could it be anger from contradiction? Could it be desire to be quiet? Could it be desire for repose and tranquility? Or is it something totally different? Again, we're looking at just the mental side of it. I mean, it certainly could be they're in pain. But those are two, that would give you very different remedies depending on which one you chose there.
So, for instance, that's a really good question, the one that you just gave, that example of an animal that growls when you
mm-hmm.
approach. Well, there could be, is it the owner that is approaching? Is it a stranger that is approaching?
Right.
Is it somebody coming who rang the doorbell? My question to you is, if the dog always growls in such a circumstance, is this a rubric that is used, or because, you know, you want the dog to be nice to strangers or whatever?
Right. So in a way, what you're saying is this is going back up to the main categories, is this a normal behavior that we just don't like?
Yes.
So is maybe this just a normal protective type of thing, and it's normal for this dog and not an issue? So that's a question that the practitioner would have to resolve. The practitioner, you know, it may be that you have a person who's a pulsatilla and gets offended very easily. And when they go to their dog in certain circumstances, the dog goes, "Arr!"
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the only growl. And yet, because the person is so sensitive, they feel like they're being aggressively attacked by their dog. And so in that case, it's a normal behavior of the dog.
As long as the dog's not going to go and do more growling or bite them.
Right, that's what I'm saying. If all the dog does is grrr, it may be you could have one person that goes, that's fine, my dog's talking to me. Another
yeah.
goes, well, you know, I just haven't trained this dog as well as I need to yet. And another one goes, oh, my God, he's attacking me.
Okay. But what about, like, when you have guests in your home, you don't want the guest to feel as if they are being attacked. So do we just tell the guest, stand back from the dog because he likes to growl?
Not ultimately. What you want to do there, it's 90% on that one, 95% a training issue. But if you've done the appropriate training and you still have a dog who's growling, then you have to decide, is this an angry dog? Or is this a fearful dog? Because that's another one. This aversion to being approached, to being touched, could be because they're afraid. And so which one is it? And then once you've figured that out and used other symptoms from other parts of the body, then you would give a homeopathic remedy that hopefully would eliminate the growling from whatever its cause. So it's back to what I talked about last week. If you have a circle, imagine, I need to figure a way to do this auditorially, but when I teach, I walk in a circle, and everything in the circle is healthy behavior. You can have a healthy dog that growls a little bit. You can have a healthy dog that's a little bit fearful. But if the dog or cat that's so fearful that they're always hiding, that's clearly ill. If you have a dog that is aggressive and biting and won't stop growling and is really aggressive, that's clearly abnormal. And then you have the whole range in between that you're not sure, is that abnormal or not? And so you have to work with all of those. Number one, and that's going back up to the first four things, does this need training or homeopathy? Is it a normal behavior that we don't like, or is it more the, is it an unacceptable behavior? And is there any physical problem going on? So that's what you'd have to do in that case. But you shouldn't have to accept. If the behavior really doesn't work in your home, you have to stop and think, is this me or is this the dog? But if it really is that the dog has a quirk that indicates possible illness, then you try to treat it. If it doesn't get better, then you may have to look at rehoming the animal.
Yes.
But first you try to treat it.
It's very interesting. Because you started off telling us that one of the reasons that animals end up in the pound is because of these behavioral problems.
Mm-hmm.
And now at this juncture, you're saying if this animal does have an unacceptable behavior
And you've treated it
and you've tried to train it.
Right.
And you've given it what it seems to need, and now you have to rehome it. I'm not understanding where
that
it's
is
going
only,
to go.
That's only if it's a quirky behavior that is, turns out it's not an illness in the animal. It's something that just doesn't work in your house.
Okay.
So, for instance.
So, like the Pulsatilla one was so
right.
sensitive. Okay.
Or, say you have... that you're an antique collector and you have tons of fragile things.
Yeah.
And you've had three cats that were really the sort of quiet, laid-back, lounge-around kind of cats. And then you get a cat that is just one of these hyper, full of energy, running around the house, and things start getting broken. So that cat may need to be homed. This is an entirely normal, healthy cat that just doesn't fit in your environment. And so your choice, I mean, I actually visited Wendy Jensen, who's a wonderful homeopathic veterinarian in New Hampshire, and she had a living room with very, very high ceiling. And on the wall over the couch, quite high up, maybe like 8 and 10 feet up or 7 and 9 feet up, were two shelves, clearly to be used for display, and they were empty. And so she had also had young children. She had two young cats and two young children. And I said, so Wendy, do your kids climb up there? Is that why there's nothing up there? And she said, oh, I completely forgot they were empty. Our cats were jumping up there and knocking down whatever was there. Well, that's just because they were healthy cats. They were jumping 7 feet.
That's amazing.
And so they didn't need rehoming. She just took stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
But it is sometimes, you know, you might have, sometimes circumstances get in the way, and it's not an illness on the animal's part. It's just that they don't fit where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Or circumstances change. Sometimes dogs need to get rehomed because they are very energetic walkers, and not that they pull really hard on the leash, but they pull a little bit or they walk quite fast. And the person has now become very ill and doesn't have much energy and just can't move with that dog. So they now need to get in a dog walker because they can't do that anymore. So it's not rehoming, but it's having to change. It's not a remedy isn't what's needed because the animal is full of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other hand, there are times when a remedy may be needed because a dog is so full of energy and pulls on a leash all the time. So I had a dog I was treating in D.C. who had several problems. I forget the other problems. But one of the main things is this 60-year-old woman was pretty strong, and they went on long walks, and she said her arm was hurting her a lot, her arms, because the dog pulled so hard and was just anytime he saw somebody, he was pulled, and he was, you know, it wasn't necessarily anger, but he was really strong. And belladonna was the remedy that took care of his physical problems and had him be 80% better on walks. And any time he needed belladonna, what would show up first was this headstrong, I'm going to do what I want, pulling on the leash kind of thing, this real flaring, and belladonna would take care of that. So there's two examples where one, you need a dog sitter or a dog walker, and the other was you needed a remedy.
Excellent.
So that's why sometimes remedies don't work, because there's nothing to fix energetically.
Right.
And other times remedies work brilliantly because it is an energetic imbalance causing the problem.
So we have to pay attention to then the home circumstances and the individuals in the home, their health, and how that might affect the interrelationship
mm-hmm.
between the animal. And and then just how to reach some sort of a balance between the owner and the pet. There, I have a question in the chat that says, can homeopathy cure psychological pet problems like being hand shy?
So, again, for that, we go back to my original guidelines. So, number one, does the problem need homeopathy or does the problem need training? So, if you have a horse who's been abused or a dog who's been abused, homeopathy will not fix the hand shyness at the beginning. It might help, but you also have to slowly get that dog or horse to trust you and to get used to you. So it's a training issue and may or may not need homeopathy initially. But say you have a dog who is still that every time you approach it, it's fine. But as soon as you reach out to pet it, the dog flinches and ducks his head and doesn't want his head to be touched at all. So first you're going to want to see if there's a physical ailment causing that. Is there actually a pain somewhere in the head? Are the ears sore or the eyes sore? And if there's not, then you could use head pain, external head pain. You could use aversion to being touched. You could use aversion to being approached. You could use fear of being approached there if the animal acts fearful. So homeopathy can absolutely correct hand shyness along with being sure that you're doing the training part of it that needs to happen. So the other thing is you'd have to look at the dogs, like we just said, you have to look at the household. Is this dog living in a household where one person is super gentle and nice with the dog, and you've got maybe a 4-year-old boy who's going through a full energy, high energy, and every time he sees the dog, he hits it, or he hits it with a ball, or he thinks it's cute to have the dog play catch, but he's doing it in a way with his hand that's hurting it. So you have to always look to see, what is there anything else that's causing it? That would be like an obstacle to cure. But yes, hand shyness, you know, being shy to the hand can be treated with homeopathy. It also brings up for me, I think flower essences are the first place to start when you have any behavior problems, because if you have behavior problems and you aren't positive which rubric to use, you're going to have less success with homeopathy. But flower essences gently treat, and therefore, and they treat more of a broad spectrum way. So you don't have to decide if the animal is afraid of specific things or has a fear in general. So is it just afraid of the hand, or is it afraid of things in general? So with flower essences, you have mimulus and aspen. And one is afraid of known things, and the other is afraid of unknown things, sort of a generalized fear. With flower essences, you combine both of them. You give mimulus and aspen. And if they're sort of cowardly, in addition, you give larch for confidence. So I love using flower essences first. Start with Rescue Remedy and then move on to the different flower essence companies that have combination remedies, or read the Bach and decide which of the Bach flowers are most appropriate. So that's where I would start first, unless it's a clear-cut thing. For instance, if you have a dog who wants to roam and escapes every time he gets a chance to go outside, he escapes, I would start that dog with homeopathy rather than flower essences, because it's a very specific symptom. And there's a rubric in the repertory, wander, desire too. And then you would look to see, which often happens, did this start or become worse after a rabies vaccine? And then you would use generalities vaccines, and you would use mind hydrophobia. So that's a symptom that I would specifically do with homeopathy, as opposed to immediately to starting with flower essences right away.
That was good.
And just so now, anything else on the chat?
No, I forgot what question I was going to ask. I need a remedy for memory loss.
It's called ginkgo.
Oh
yeah. You have to remember to take it.
I know. Very good.
So let's look at a few remedies that are useful for certain conditions. And remember, this is not saying give this because of the condition. It has to fit the other symptoms of the animal. But the remedies to think about, and there are a couple of neat little tidbits here in the last 5 minutes we have. So if an animal is anxious, shy, fearful, nervous, timid, scared, that whole realm, you want to think about aconite. Especially if this animal has been this way ever since something happened, then you would use aconite, even if whatever happened was 10 years ago. If you can remember that it's ever since, then you try aconite. Now, here's an interesting one. There's a dog that had severe chronic pancreatitis, and then a close friend died. And after that, she became scared of noises, even really, really far away claps of thunder, usually loud noises. And the symptoms, this fearfulness and her chronic pancreatitis, became worse after some moves and after construction in the house. Giving aconite cleared up her physical symptoms of pancreatitis, and she became calmer, happier, and more centered. Occasionally, she would need... when there was stress in the environment, she would need another dose of aconite, but it was less than 2 or 3 times a year.
So let me see. Are you saying that aconite can be used as almost a constitutional, or as, because you think of it typically as an acute, like after you've gone in a cold?
Nope. Every single remedy there is a constitutional.
Cool.
I really disagree. Even Dr. Pitcairn still teaches acute and chronic. And while there are remedies that lend themselves more to acute and remedies that lend themselves more to the deeper acting, every single one. For instance, I'm going to talk about arnica. And here's a people example of the difference. You think of arnica for injury and trauma. But what's the keynote of arnica? How do you know that it's really the time to use arnica in an injury?
You don't want anybody to touch the boo-boo.
Yes, or touch you even. You don't want people to approach you. You don't want to be, it hurts so much. I hurt so much, don't bug me. Okay, so Paul Hirschke was getting ready to teach a class on arnica. We knew that was the remedy coming up. but we hadn't gotten to it yet in the weekend. And he said that his wife had a child that was a patient who was coughing, and it was probably about a two-year-old, could walk but not really talk very well, very articulately, and it had a very bad cough. And so she brought the boy in, and this is just something very random that just had happened, and it just come into her practice. And so she brought the boy in with this cough, and what we noticed was the child would ask to be picked up and then ask to be put down, and then ask to be picked up and ask to be put down. So what remedy does that make you think of? A common one.
A commonly wants to be picked up, maybe chamomile?
Yeah, chamomile. Chamomile, yeah. Is what, you know, that's the one, you don't know what you want. You want to be picked up, you want to be put down. But Paul was looking at it, and Paul saw something totally different in that behavior. And he... another characteristic of the child, and I can't remember now... I was looking for the rubric and I can't find it, but there was something like when the child talked, that was when the cough began. Or when the child cried, the cough would begin. So there was a specific something. Yeah, here it is. When the child was crying, the cough was worse. And I went to that rubric because that's the kind of thing you look up first, is cough aggravated by crying. And arnica is a 3. And I looked at Paul and I said, you've got to be kidding, because he was going to teach arnica. And it was arnica because it was the kid wanted to be picked up and consoled, but he hurt so much that once he was picked up, he wanted down again.
Because it hurt to be touched? Or what was it?
It hurt to be touched. Yeah, he hurt. It was the arnica symptom of,
right.
I hurt so much, I don't want to be touched.
But he wanted to be held.
He wanted to be held, but then as soon as he was held, it hurt too much.
Right, so he says, put me down now because it hurts. And so
but he didn't know. He wasn't articulate enough to say anything. He was pre-verbal.
So this
he was walking but not talking.
We call this a concomitant. Is that what you would say it is, or is
specific? It was just a modality.
Okay.
And so, but the point is, arnica was needed. Here's a chronic coughing case, and arnica was what was needed. It wasn't arnica for injury.
Okay.
Now I've not had any of these cases, but I've heard of several cases where horses continually injured themselves. They would run into the gate. They would just continually injure themselves. And after getting arnica, they would stop injuring themselves. They would stop being so clumsy. And other things would also improve. So that's a case where arnica for those horses was a constitutional remedy.
Very good. These are really important facts. I mean, most people may not really know this stuff.
Right. And now there's a homeopath who from Europe somewhere who does email consulting, and one of my clients pointed out something he talked about, and we've tried it a bit, and I've seen some result on it. I haven't tested it as much as I'd like to see it tested. Every cat that's newly adopted who was a stray or a feral and didn't really want to be handled much, which is most of them, they would give arnica to these cats. And in many of them, there was significant improvement. So that's one, if for the anxious, shy, fearful, nervous, doesn't want to be handled cat, arnica is one of the things to think about.
Okay.
Of course, we have.
Before we end, we have about 9 minutes left.
Oh, that's right.
before we end, you know, I do want to mention your courses, and I want to mention how to reach you and your website and all of that good stuff.
Right.
So that people can contact you if they have a question, if they have something that they want to have us address on a future show. So you go to www.myhealthyanimals.com, and you're also going to have a course in June. So you want to talk about
actually,
that?
Well, actually, one of the courses has closed, has rescheduled to August, but we don't have a date yet.
Okay.
So the course in Maine is not, at this point, is not happening. And that was June 2nd and 3rd. So that one's moved to August. So if you are interested in taking a course in homeopathy and you can get to Maine, email me and check the website. Keep checking the website for details. And then if...
5 days.
And we also still don't know. I was just looking to see. Oops, maybe I have an answer right now. So hang on a minute. We have the summer classes in Bowie, and we're canceling it.
Oh.
So if there are people listening to this right now,
right,
and you want to attend the homeopathy or acupuncture in Bowie, Maryland, today is the last day to say no go. So unless we get maybe 10 more people right
okay.
now in the next hour calling me at 410-771-4968, 410-771-4968, that class will not be happening.
Okay. I will tweet it out there, and maybe somebody will be interested, and they'll get a group of 10 people together. So
there we go. That's what it would take. All right. So next week, more behavior.
More behavior next week. Okay. Do you want to say anything else to the end of this show? You were talking about the European homeopath. And
That was Arnica.
That was Arnica. Okay.
We've done that.
Okay. So you want to do again more of this type of discussion?
We'll do a little more on behavior. We'll finish up looking at some of the different remedies for some of the behavior problems.
Okay, these have been really helpful. Great hints for anybody who is concerned about their pet and wants to know how to approach dealing with these problems and where to even begin to look at what to do, and then knowing that they can call you. So, So that's great. And coming up next, I'm going to just talk about what we've got coming up next. And on next Monday, we're going to have the live Health In video cast talking about the 10 top reasons women get migraines. And so that's going to be pretty interesting. All you have to do is go to Homeopathy World Community, and I will have a banner up there. And if there's not one there yet, just look at the Health In, and there will be a list of shows that we've done in the past that we've already recorded. You can listen to the archives of those. They're really fascinating. Or you can get a heads up on what's coming up. So next week, next Monday, is 10 Top Reasons for Migraines in Women. And the following week, Monday, we're going to do 10 Top Reasons for Migraines in Men. So men also do get headaches. Right following this show, in about 7 minutes, we're going to get on the line on Blog Talk Radio with Alan Phillips, and we're going to talk about our health freedom issues, because we have been losing them left and right. They are pretty insidious ways that they have been eating away at our ability to get herbs, to get energy medicines, to get homeopathy, and also to be able to practice. Plus, in general, where we have a right to take care of our families in a way that we want to, how government and industry are starting to take over and take control. So you want to know about this and get in alignment with the other people who feel the same way that you do to protect our generation, future generations for freedom. And there are organizations that are working together in that respect. And because this is the end of the month, next Monday we are not going to be talking with Grant Bentley for the summer vacation. However, Dr. Adil Chimthalawala Kasim on Wednesday mornings is going to continue with our studying about the rubrics in the repertory, in Kent's repertory, which is very, very enlightening and very helpful to learn about what it is, the sensations that we feel, the issues that we have in the organs of the chest, in our torso, including the ribs, the lungs, the heart, the mammae, the even probably extending and radiating into the limbs and all different other parts of the body. What happens? How do we feel? How do we look up rubrics? And how do we apply it to health and wellness or to when people are not feeling good? So those are the shows that we have during the week. Monday morning at 11, the Health In live video. Monday evening is now on hold for the summer. Wednesday morning at 11 a.m. This is all Eastern Time, USA. And then Thursday, we've got Pet Health with Christina Chambrow and Vaccines and Your Rights with Alan Phillips at noon. And so I'm going to probably end this show today, and I'll see you back in about 4 minutes with Alan. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brock and Dr. Christina Chambrow. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!